Hello and good afternoon again. It's me, Barbara Imhoff, and
it's me, Niamh Shaw, back again, Barbara, for another month. Always a pleasure.
Yes, it's great. It's the space specials again, and we have a special topic. It's the solar eclipse, and it is because it has happened recently, and Niamh has been there in the US where it was, you know, the best visible spot, actually. And maybe Niamh, you just want to tell us what was sort of what happened, actually, you know, what was the feeling? Where did you go to watch it? And what was happening then?
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. Like last Monday, just a little over a week ago, there was the total solar eclipse. So what that means is that basically the moon covered the sun entirely, casting a shadow down on Earth. And the path, as the Earth orbited, went across, started in the Pacific and went across Mexico and the lower half of the United States, a little bit into Canada. And then it kind of moved on upwards. And if you were directly under that shadow, you would have experienced what's known as totality, which is at least a minute, depending on where you were. It ranged from like a minute and a half to 4 minutes of complete darkness. And I was on the border between Mexico and Texas. And my husband, David, he had been to an eclipse in 2017. So he had the whole thing figured out. And we were in the zone in the US where they had the longest amount of darkness, which was just over 4 minutes. And so that area was Eagle Pass. We were just outside a place called Eagle Pass. We've been planning it. Well, I met him in 2021. So we've been planning to go and see this eclipse since then. And he is a US citizen. So it was very easy accommodation wise. He has family in New Mexico. So we flew in there. And then we drove down. I think it took us 9 hours to drive to Eagle Pass. We stayed over in Big Bend National Park, which is kind of halfway between New Mexico and Eagle Pass. And the Monday morning, we got up at 4 and we made our way to Eagle Pass. It took us like an hour or two to figure out where we were going to go. And we found this amazing field with a really good phone reception, because I had decided to let people join us for a live stream. And so there was a lot of people in Ireland and in different countries around the world who knew about it and kind of joined us for the live stream. So it was really important that we had at least 5G network. David had bought a Starlink, which, by the way, didn't work. The satellite did not work. I don't know if anybody out there has a satellite Wi-Fi, but we couldn't get it to work. And thankfully, we had a really strong 5G network, so it didn't stop us. So yeah, so we found this field and there was nobody else there. And I set up a few cameras because I wanted there to be the live stream, but I also wanted a view of the field going through total darkness, because the live stream was just focusing on our faces and I knew that my camera and everything wouldn't be very good on a phone. And we set up and kind of, I think it was like around about like 20 past one, it started to get a little bit colder and darker and darker. It sort of was like, you know, in the summer evenings in Europe, the way we have, you know, many hours of light for the, you know, around the time of the longest day. It was sort of like that, you know, kind of after like 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. And then it got completely dark, like totally and utterly dark, which was incredible. There was still some light coming from the clouds, but I'll put a link in this you know, in your notes to the actual footage, and you'll see it. And you know, maybe we'll play a few minutes of it as well shortly for people to hear it too. Like,
watch.
Look how dark it is. It's just dark. It's just dark. It's dark. It's just dark.
It's really dark. It's like nighttime.
We still just got a
oh, lads. Oh my God, it's gone completely dark here.
There's a little bit of sliver of light. The eclipse has not concluded yet, but it is deleted now.
Oh my
God. Look how dark it is.
Look how dark it is.
There it is. Look.
Oh, there's the corona.
The corona.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Oh my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Isn't that just intense?
Oh, my God.
I don't know if you guys can see it, but the sun, the moon is blocking the sun, and you see the corona. There's clouds going by, and you still see it. There's
guys.
A little bit of light because it's diffused through the clouds.
Oh, my God, guys.
But look at that. It's just...
Look how dark it is.
Oh my god.
Let me see if I'm yeah, no, you see how dark it is. It's like it's dark. It's
yeah,
like
look, the automatic the lights.
All
have
the lights
on,
have come on here. And the bird wait. The birds have stopped.
And birds stopped chirping. And it's hard to explain. You know, you think it's nighttime, but it's not nighttime because it's lunchtime. And so when you actually see the sun with the moon completely covering it and this corona, so this like ring of light around, that's when you realize you're in the presence of something really unique and quite spectacular. And it was stunning. The clouds sort of dissipated the light off that corona and it made it look like it was moving. So it was like it was fizzing. So it was sort of like one of those tablets, like, you know, those vitamin tablets that you put in water and they kind of fizz. It kind of looked like that. And it was like a pale blue and a pink and a white kind of a fizz. It was stunning. And we could actually see down in the bottom right hand corner, there was this red kind of bit that stuck out. And we were initially we thought, oh, that's the diamond, you know, because you get this diamond, which is the last second of light before. And then as it moves past the first second of light after, but it wasn't. It was there the whole time. And we found out afterwards that that's a protuberance because the sun is so active at the moment. You know, so the sun is at its most active, I think, next year. And so this is actually some sort of mass ejection that's happening on the surface of the sun, which I will remind people is 450 million kilometers away. And I saw that with my own eyes. And you kind of, in those moments, I think for me, what happened was you feel that you're on a system of kind of, it's like you're a little mouse on some sort of clockwork mechanism, you know, and it's like one of those wooden kind of mechanisms. And the mechanism is oblivious to the mouse, but the mouse has to find its way of making sure that it survives and it doesn't get stuck in gears and things like that. That is exactly how it felt. It felt like that I was some little mouse and there was this huge thing happening and I was not part of it. And thankfully I understood what was going on and I knew how long it was going to last. But it brought me right back to realizing that what I'm experiencing is exactly the same as what somebody would have experienced 10,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago. No matter how far we've progressed as a civilization with our books and our internet and our Wi-Fi and malfunctioning Starlinks, we're still the same. And the only difference is that we understand completely what's going on. But it doesn't change the way you feel in that moment, which is you're on this planet and there's this interaction happening right now between the moon, the sun and Earth. And then seeing the images from space afterwards where the shadow was kind of cast right across and seeing the image of the camera that was on the looking at the sun and all its activity and then the moon just passing by, I was part of that, you know. And it really reminds you that we're just one species of many species and we're not in charge. It goes back to the same thing that we talked about last month about Antarctic. And 4 minutes is a fantastic amount of time to experience that. So sometimes you're looking up at the sun. A lot of the time I was just looking around because I was like, it's dark, like it's really dark. And you're trying to kind of find some sort of logical answer for what you're experiencing because it just doesn't make sense. And then slowly then, once it went past, you know, that you get that diamond effect and it goes past, the light comes up very, very quickly. And it goes back to kind of normal brightness within about within about 5 minutes. And I felt joyful. I felt alive. And it sort of felt like immediately I said, I remember saying to David, it felt like a reset. That's the best way to explain it. It just felt like the end of something and the new beginning. That's kind of what it felt like. I was absolutely exhilarated by it. I felt really excited and happy. Other people are reporting that they got very upset, and I can understand why, because it's really a beautiful image and you're bearing witness to something that's happens nearly every year, at least once since, you know, for billions of years, you know. So there was many things going on, Barbara, at the same time. And we pulled up our gear. We got away. We were convinced we were going to get stuck in some sort of traffic jam. And literally, we just come off the road and we went back on kind of the main road. And there were loads of RVs, like those kind of caravans and trucks and stuff, literally all along the road. And we're kind of going, we were literally just off the road in a field. And you could have had this beautiful, you know, solitary experience like we did. And then we drove back and we went into, we had to drive through a town called Del Rio. And there was all this music blaring and they were having this like solar eclipse festival. So they had, you know, music and a band, and they had kind of those sort of, pop-up sort of burger joints and people selling jewelry and t-shirts and coffee. And it was just jammers. And we were like, oh, thank gosh, we went off grid and we decided to find somewhere on our own. Because I think if you're with a group of people in a city, I don't think you're able to soak in the silence and just, you know, that solitary sensation that you could just experience it on your own. So I was really glad that Dave took the time, about 2 hours extra, to find that spot, because it was perfect. So that's it in a nutshell. I mean, I was absolutely exhausted after it. I don't know if it was just all the travel, but so that happened on the Monday, and then we traveled back, and we were exhilarated on the Monday. And Tuesday, from lunchtime onwards, I wasn't capable of doing anything, and I slept for like 14 hours straight. And I don't know if it was just that I was tired, or is it just that I don't know how everybody else found watching it, but it was incredible. And it just, again, makes you feel that you're on this rock that's very old, a lot older than you. And there's all these things happening, and it's very important that you're aware of them, but never assume that you've any control over them, because you don't.
You very beautifully described the whole experience. I have a couple of, I mean, what stuck with me is sort of the birds stopped twitching. I mean, that is something really in the middle of the day. So it's always, you know, something where, you know, a thunderstorm is coming, or if, you know, something else like big, strange is happening. And so I think that is really, truly special. And then that it got really dark. And I wonder, can you describe this darkness a little bit?
It's like, it's kind of dark, like about, the darkness level is about like 10 minutes after sunset. It's not completely dark. Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that was because of the cloud, seemingly. It would have gone completely dark if we didn't have cloud cover. And we had some cloud cover. Thankfully, we didn't have total cloud cover so that we could actually see the corona. But Dave had been to the eclipse in 2017 in the US, and he said it was dark, like middle of the night dark. This was dark, but you could still see, you know, you could still see your hand in front of you. So I would say it's like dark about 20 minutes after sunset. So it's dark, and, you know, the birds have stopped, all the wildlife have gone in for the night, but there's still a little bit of light as the sun is kind of going down below the horizon, you know. It was a different kind of darkness, though. It wasn't like nighttime darkness. You know, the way nighttime darkness is sort of heavy in terms of, you know, it just makes you want to go asleep, and it kind of makes you wind down. It's like your circadian rhythm kind of listens to it. This is different. This was a much kind of lighter darkness, you know. It was like Yeah. And just before it got very dark, it was sort of like when you get a really bad thunderstorm and, you know, the clouds go very dark or I was thinking it reminded me of when I was a child and my mother would have the washing out on the washing line. And that when it got dark like that, there would be this like, everybody help, get the washing in. It would cause this sort of frenetic chaos. You know, everybody grab hands. You know, like, you know, it was going to be a total disaster if the washing got wet by the rain. Not that it would, you just rewash it. But it was sort of that kind of, it was exactly that kind of light. And we drove past a load of a farmer who kept bees. Like he would have had, he must have had about 200 hives, I'd say. And I would have loved to have been able to stop there because bees also stop. We know this, that bees actually stop working as well. So they know, they seem to know, or maybe they're tricked into thinking that it's nighttime or whatever, but the silence is palpable. The silence is palpable. And the birds stop tweeting well before it gets dark. They stop tweeting as it kind of goes dusky. Like they kick in pretty early on, you know. And then what's very interesting is then once the main darkness passes, they're just back to it straight away. It's like they know.
Interesting.
Yes, it's very interesting.
I think so that also, I think also this kind of light difference must sort of create a stimulus, you know, in all these animals so that they sort of then know, okay, now we have to stop or so. They must also feel a little bit irritated maybe afterwards because it only takes 5 minutes, right, or 4 minutes until they start again. And then I think the other thing is what you also beautifully mentioned is sort of the relationship and the interconnectedness of all these planetary bodies, or the, well, it's a sun, a moon, and a planet basically, and that, you know, despite the fact that everything's so far away, and the moon is 400,000 kilometers away, and then the sun is 450 million kilometers away, so that's really something, I would say, that, you know, that's this, that it all has an effect, although the distances are so large, right?
Yeah.
I think that was also quite beautiful.
It's like when that happens, it's like in your head, I hear the sound of kind of boulders moving or something, you know, like when you watch these movies and they're usually about Christianity, usually, you know, and like miracles and stuff, and you hear this sound of rock moving. That was sort of the soundtrack in my head. You could feel that there was something happening. There was this movement happening. We couldn't hear it, but it felt like it was huge, you know.
And then there's one other thing, because right now I'm just also giving a course on a spaceship to Mars, sort of a short design workshop for the International Space University. And what is really important there is the radiation protection. I mean, we are on Earth protected by the Earth's magnetic field from, you know, cosmic rays, but particularly from solar particle events. And what are solar particle events? That are these protuberances, there are these mass ejections, you know, the sort of the coronal effects, and that, you know, and the sun has a sort of rhythm where you know, it grows the activities and then it decreases the activities. But when it grows, right, you know, as it is the case right now and will be in the next year, we also can expect, you know, really hard solar particle events. And that means even, you know, when you are on the surface of the moon, you really have to find shelter and protect yourself. So also for, you know, when you're traveling on a spaceship to Mars, one might look for constellations where, you know, where these protuberances and these mass ejections of the sun's corona are lower, and, you know, and do not have this high activity, because then there's also a lot of radiation and solar particle events happen.
Yeah. So these are all things that you're thinking about, like, when do you plan to go to Mars? Don't go when the sun is at maximum activity. That makes an awful lot of sense as well. And you don't normally get to see those protuberances. So it really puts all of that into your hands when you're standing in a field. And the reason why I wanted to live stream it was I wanted to show people what it looks like on the ground, because a lot of the time when you're looking at coverage, say from NASA, they're focusing on the sun, which is amazing, you know, seeing the moon pass across the sun, but it still feels one degree of separation from us, because we're like, okay, that's another thing, you know, put on the kettle there, whatever. But when it actually goes dark, you're in, you know, right beside where you are, and you're standing in the field, and you're surrounded by, there's nothing, there's no kind of infrastructure around you. You feel it in a very kind of a natural way. And I think it feels very, very different. And you understand that 4 minutes where the moon is in front of the sun, it gets really cold. And that's only for 4 minutes. And it gets cold about 5 minutes before those 4 minutes and 5 minutes afterwards. And it makes you realize how much we rely on the sun for our heat. You know, you kind of just take it all for granted, you know, and how if the sun, anything were to happen, the sun, or say, I don't know, for some weird reason that the moon got geolocked or something in that position, that as a species, all the species, we really wouldn't last very long. The ice age would come, you know, all those things would happen very, very, very quickly, you know, and that's kind of crazy. And people who witnessed a partial eclipse, I think, can also appreciate that to a degree as well. Did you ever experience an eclipse?
Yes, actually, that was 1999, but I was in Vienna, and we were on the roof of a building, and yeah, it was quite impressive. And it's sort of, I mean, how can I say, when you're in a city, of course, you're not so aware of the animals, you know, they're stopping their activities, but still, it was quite impressive to see, because then suddenly, sort of, there's another planetary body in front of the sun, or a celestial body in front of the sun, and that it's possible to cover up something which is so far away and so strong and sort of makes our solar system, and you know, and that a small, very tiny body can cover it up. I think that's also yeah, it was quite an amazing experience.
Yeah. My fascination with eclipses came about, I remember I was finishing my PhD, it was 1999, and I was living in Dublin, and nobody really knew about it. Like it was sort of, I mean, obviously we knew, because we were like, I was in a science department, and at my university, they had all these telescopes and stuff, and I just was working from home that morning, and I decided that I wanted to stay late and see it. And so I went out to my car park, you know, and people tell you, oh, you know, you can view the sun by making this piece of paper. And I just couldn't get it to work. I just couldn't get it to work. And I remember I was packing up, and I opened the boot of my car, like the rear of my car, and it was a hatchback. And as I remember, as I lifted the hatchback up, the reflection of the sun just caught the window. And I was like, and I saw that, you know, I saw that the moon was covering the sun. And by that stage, it was like 80%. We got up to 91%. And I can remember even just seeing that the moon was covering the sun, it freaked me out. And so I stood there on my own. I felt really self-conscious, because I was the only person and in this car park, and it was kind of like an apartment block. And I waited until it was like 91%. And again, this only lasted a minute or so. At the 91%, I can remember I was just standing there, and it was really strong bird song, because we were living by a kind of a stream, and bump, it got kind of dark, like it was going to rain, and the bird stopped. I was like, oh my gosh. And it got cold. And actually, it got colder there than it did, because Texas is quite warm. It, you know, the temperature dropped in Texas, but this was markedly cold, and the wind picked up. And we were only at 91%. And I can remember actually being very scared that day. I suddenly realized how out of control I was with everything around me. And where this one was a joyful one, and I loved the fact that we're not in control. I think it was the first time that I really thought about, you know, how dependent we are on the sun and how we're this planet. And, you know, because at the time I really wasn't, you know, as involved in the space sector as I am now and kind of trying to communicate it. And I went into, you know, then it stopped and I drove. And I really felt like I was the only person on the whole planet that had experienced this. It just felt like, because my family didn't know about it, nobody was really talking about it. There was a little piece on the news. And I went into the university and some of the students there, you know, had gone outside to look at the telescope. But overall, most people were still doing their thing. And it was like, I felt like I'd been kind of airlifted by aliens. Something had happened to me. And then I just was dropped back. And only a handful of people actually knew that I'd had this experience. And that kind of set me on this kind of fascination that I've had for a very long time to see an eclipse, you know. But yeah, I mean,
we used these like black
glasses, know, yeah,
to glasses or very dark sunglasses and so on. What kind of protection gear were you wearing?
Well, that day, like in Ireland in 1991 or 1999, I wasn't wearing anything because I only saw the reflection with the sun. But when I was in Texas, yeah, no, Dave had organized everything. So we had the special glasses. And what's amazing when you wear those glasses is like when you see the sun, it's quite big in the sky. You know, it takes up, if you look at if the sun is kind of, you know, blasting away on an ordinary day, if you kind of just look at the landscape, it takes up probably maybe about 5 to 10% of the horizon, right? But when you put the glasses on, it's really small. It's actually a lot smaller. It's like a dot. And it's actually what happens is that the atmosphere diffuses the light. So if you, I can imagine, then that got me thinking, gosh, if I was on the moon and I saw the sun, I'd realize how far away it is. It doesn't feel that far away because it takes up so much space in our sky. It's actually really small with the glasses. And so I had a special thing for the phone. So on the back of my phone, you can get one of those same things, like a special pair of sunglasses for your phone camera. And I was live streaming, I would toggle between, you know, looking at me and then looking at the sun. And I would put it up to the sun. And again, it was like tiny. And I'd have to zoom. Mm-hmm. I'd have to put my fingers to kind of zoom and show it because it was so small. It was just like a little dot. And again, we think the sun is a lot nearer, but it's not 450 million kilometers away. And yet we saw a perturbance. That just showed you how big was that solar mass ejection, like coronal mass ejection, to be able to see it. It must be huge if you can actually see it.
Yeah, I think so. That is amazing.
Isn't it amazing? And I know, like, at the moment, the sun is at, you know, it's nearly at maximum activity. Like next year, 2025 is when it's at absolute solar max. So it was, it really was an incredible experience. And there's one in 2026 in Spain, and I highly recommend, now that it's going to be in mainland Europe, that everybody makes an effort to get to see it, because it's something that you have to experience it. And I think everybody has a very different experience. So yeah,
that seems like a final sentence already.
Yes.
And you can actually close it there. So this has been about the solar eclipse. It happened on, I think, on the 8th of April, correct? Yep. And on the microphone today were Meet Shaw.
That's me.
And Barbara Imhof. These were the space specials. They are always on Radio Orange every third Tuesday of the month between 2 and 2:30. And yeah, Meet and I, we are always conversing about sort of the latest, greatest space topics.
See you next month.
Yes, see you next month. Thanks to all the listeners. And I say ciao. Bye-bye.
And I take a deep breath and look at the rest of my helmet.